another...
Hello, Milena. How are you today?
Hi, Chris. I was talking to Chris, not to anyone listening to the podcast.
My name is Chris Bader.
My name is Milena Lukeson.
You're listening to Extra Sequential, a new podcast from Perth in Western Australia.
No longer new, babe. 5 episodes means we're old men.
Did you just call me babe?
Babe.
Thanks.
Honey. Sweet cheeks.
I feel like a biker mole.
Pert buns.
You noticed. So we are talking about comic books, pop culture-y type stuff.
Yes, comic books, superhero and independent stuff. There's a bit of range of everything.
You can have independent superheroes.
Yeah, you definitely can.
Yeah.
Because we might mention Kick-Ass later in the show. That's sort of an independent superhero.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep. Range of stuff. So not just for the geeky among you, but for the literary snobs. We've got a little bit of everything. I consider myself a literary snob.
We are a graphic art buffet.
Yeah, that's why we call this art Extra Sequential.
Yep, or you can eat.
Oh, that's good. We should use that as a byline. You don't like it?
It has zombie connotations.
Really?
Or you can eat.
Well, it won't when the zombie craze wears off eventually.
It won't.
I hope it will. I hope it will.
Maybe vampire zombies.
Do you like zombie comics, Chris?
Zombies? Vampires.
Do you dig this whole, like...
They're what not if, all good. The Walking Dead TV series trailer's just been released last week.
Yes.
And that looks good. Look, there's some good things.
What about the What If Wolverine Was a Zombie comics? You know those ones?
Yeah, Marvel have like a whole universe populated by zombie versions of their superheroes. I haven't read any of them. Not that familiar. But I think that would get pretty tired pretty quickly.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
I think the new thing is... historical figures in action. So like that Abe Lincoln, Time Lincoln, you know.
We'll be talking about that later, actually. There's a new one which you are going to love.
Really? Okay, cool.
Stay tuned, Maladdin.
Well, right now that's all fresh, but that'll be wearing on people's nerves in like 6 months as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
When they've run it into the ground.
All right, well, we are talking this week about stuff we've been reading. We're also talking about our theme of the week, which is Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day from this weekend that's just passed, everyone.
Yes.
Hope you all remembered and got your dad a comic book, preferably.
I should point out that in Australia and New Zealand, Father's Day is the first Sunday in September. Mm. Most other countries, it is the third Sunday in June.
Wacky.
So it's kind of like the Queen's birthday, you know, sort of different dates all over the place.
Well, it isn't a real holiday, is it? I mean,
no, we don't get the day off or anything.
No, that's why they set it on a weekend. I think that's a cop out, don't you? As a dad, I would like a day off. I'm not a dad, but if I was, I would like a day off.
One day, Maladdin.
One day, I'll get the day
then
off.
Mother's Day, we'd have to have the day off.
I want that day off too.
What did you buy your pay to?
I got him a nice set of books. Like a Polish writer, Ogliemy Maciem, that's with Fire and Sword. It's basically set, Cossack period of Polish history. It's pretty awesome stuff. Cool.
He likes his historical fiction-y kind of stuff?
Yeah, he does. Awesome. And there's a cool set of Polish films, so if you can track them down. They're kind of like Lord of the Rings, but historical.
Fire and...
With Fire and Sword. And that whole era of... Polish occupation and all. It's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Cool.
What'd you get your dad?
I bought my dad the new Rolling Stones DVD called Exile on Main Street, I think it was called, one of the Rolling Stones albums.
Cool.
So it's kind of a look at it's quite a 70s, I think it was released in the 70s, a seminal album for them. So it's kind of a interviews with them and how they record it. And
wow.
He's English, so he likes all his classic rock because that's kind of the stuff he grew up with. So, cool. He hasn't watched it yet, but...
Does he have a DVD player? Did you check? I got you a Blu-ray of Rolling Stones. Sorry, I spat on you.
That's quite all right. You're a passionate young man.
I know. I'm very excited about Rolling Stones DVDs.
Yes. So, let's get straight into what we've been reading and watching. Have been watching, you know, sometimes because I write for Broken Frontier, which is a website.
Do.
I write for my blog,
comicproducers.com. Good blog.
Thank you. And every now and then I'll get a free DVD or book or whatever. So
show off.
Recently, it's awesome. I got Warner Brothers sent me Batman Brave and the Bold Season 1, Part 1.
Wow.
It's awesome. I love it. And I'll go into more depth on my blog.
You're not just a crappy little blogger. You're a serious journalist.
Well, I am, but...
promotional materials.
But I'm just happy to grab whatever I can. So it's Batman Brave and the Bold. There was a Brave and the Bold miniseries. Well, series, long-running series, probably from DC back in the 70s. And then where Batman would team up with different characters each issue.
Yes, yes.
And fight crime with the
partners. Swamp Thing and Batman and all that stuff, yeah.
Then they kind of relaunched it a couple of years, last year, I think, with JMS, J. Michael Straczynski.
Right.
So it's not just Batman, but it's just called Brave and the Bold, a different characters team up. So this animated series debuted in late 2008. It's got some of the same creators as the Justice League, so some of the same writers and directors.
Right.
It opens, the very first episode, the first scene, there's a German bad guy with a clock for a face in a clock museum.
Achtung, Batman! That's horrible, I'm sorry.
That is the Clock King, so as soon as you see that, you know that you're in for some wacky fun.
I love the Clock King.
Diedrich Bader is Batman. He was in the Drew Carey Show. He was kind of one of the dumb sidekicks. He's also in Balls
the tall
of
one?
Balls of Fury, no.
Oh.
He was also in Balls of Fury, which is Balls an awesome ping pong movie.
Stars you keep
Maggie
talking
Q.
About that, yeah.
It's a funny film.
Oh, right.
So, and each episode starts with kind of like a pre-credit sequence where Batman, so just like 3 or 4 minutes where Batman teams up with the hero, and then in the bulk of the episode he'll team up with a different hero.
Cool.
The opening sequence is very jazzy and kind of boo-bap-doo-bap and boo-boo-skilly-bap, whoa-whoa, baby.
I think you can catch the show on Australian TV. It's showing on,
yes.
I think it's on Go.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
Exclamation mark.
Go!
Speed Racer, go!
Go, baby, go! Yeah.
So each episode, Batman teams up with a different hero. So there's the Jamie Rees Blue Beetle. See, I'll call him Jamie Rees because we have a big Latin community here in Perth, Western Australia. But in the show, they call him Harmy Rice or something. So I guess that's the proper pronunciation. But he's like the younger version of Blue Beetle. So they're all actual comic characters from the pages of DC Comics. Deadman appears as one issue.
The acrobat, was he?
The acrobat who dies,
yeah. Yep.
And then he's got a red costume and he's kind of inhabits people's bodies.
I have an old Kelly Jones set of comics with Deadman and Batman, and they have glow-in-the-dark covers.
Oh, I've got that.
I miss glow-in-the-dark covers, eh? They're fighting mummies, I recall.
Awesome.
Oh, Deadman.
Green Arrow turns up. Episode 2 has Batman and Plastic Man teaming up, the stretchy guy.
Stretchy
and
man.
And it kind of goes into Plastic Man's origin, who used to be a crook, fell into Vada Chemicals.
You can tell me this, actually, Chris. How many stretchy superheroes are there?
There's Plastic Man, there's Elongated Man. I think there's Bouncing Boy, but he's kind of turns into a ball when he bounces from
that's
Legend
close
of
enough,
Superheroes.
Plastic Man turns into balls.
Mr. Fantastic.
Monsieur Fantastic
for the Fantastic Four. Oh, that's probably about it as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
Jimmy Olsen turned plasticky at one point in Crazy Silver Age stories.
And look out, world, because Taylor Lautner will be in the
Stretch Armstrong
movie.
Which he wasn't even a cat.
No, he wasn't, but I relate him in the whole world of epic crossover of stretchy men. Are there any stretchy villains?
Not that I'm aware of.
The Blob doesn't stretch, does he?
No, he's just sort of a fat guy that doesn't move.
Does he expand?
No.
No. Well, then he doesn't count.
No.
Huh.
So it's quite a fun show. It's not irreverent. Like, there was... it's kind of almost like the crazy comics in the 50s and 60s where anything would happen. You know, Batman would fight dinosaurs or...
Polka dot guy and all that stuff. Yeah,
he'd turn into a half-zebra creature or whatever.
Yeah.
One of the episodes... opens with gorillas riding pterodactyls who attack a cruise ship with a ray gun and they turn humans into apes. That is the best idea since you cut your beard.
I didn't think that was a great idea then. No.
Gorillas are pterodactyls.
But, gorillas and DC have a long history together, I think is fair to say.
Yeah, that started in the 50s and 60s. There was, with Marvel as well, there's this kind of this phenomenon that whenever... gorillas would be on the covers, sales would skyrocket, so DC and Marvel said, let's put gorillas on the cover as much as we can.
Probably the same phenomenon that made all those chimpanzee movies, like
Planet
in
of
the 80s.
And...
No, like the movies where there's like lovable chimpanzees up being the president like and all that stuff.
In the Clint Eastwood film?
Yeah, I was watching Lost in Translation last night,
and
there's a scene where Bill Murray, you know, in character, is watching a film he did like years ago, and it's dubbed in Japanese, and he's talking and looking all suave, and then there's a shot of this chimp like going, I don't know, and then their car's like jumping over like hills, and you hear the chimp screaming, I need to see this film. Bill Murray and chimps are wild,
There's some good voice acting. So Tom Kenny, who's SpongeBob SquarePants, he's Plastic Man. John DiMaggio, who's Bender,
yeah,
is Aquaman.
Busy man, actually, right now.
Kevin Conroy, who played Batman in the animated series in the 90s. He's as the Phantom Stranger.
Oh, good. So he's not playing Batman.
No.
Oh, I'm happy.
Mark Hamill.
Yep.
Luke Skywalker. He's as the Spectre.
It's good that they've got them on but not playing the same characters.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Alan Tudyk from TV series Firefly is the Barry Allen version of Flash. Henry Rollins. Here's his Robot Man. So it's interesting. So there's the last episode I watched was the one with the Outsiders. There was a series in the 70s and 80s, Batman and the Outsiders.
Oh, right.
And this one stars Wildcat. It's also got Metamorpho, Black Lightning, and Katana. Katana's kind of reimagined as a little schoolgirl in a school outfit with a sword. I think we've seen that too many
Katana.
Times.
Katana? Oh, okay.
She's a Japanese girl who has like a magical sword.
Okay, like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
Nothing like Mortal Kombat?
I guess. There's also a great episode called Journey to the Center of the Bat where the Ryan Choi version of Atom, not the Ray Palmer, but the version of, he's a student of the original Atom, and Aquaman, they go inside Batman to fight a virus, and Aquaman rides a platelet, and he says things like, Neptune's beard. And,
oh, yeah, I've seen this one. That's awesome.
And
yeah.
So Aquaman, as I said before, it's by the Bender guy, he's like this Errol Flynn,
yeah, I remember that,
and cavalier. Like, yeah. And he recounts, this reminds me of the epic time where I fought the, you know.
Oh, yeah, so I saw that one. That's awesome.
Come on, chum, let's fight evil together, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good. It's quite a faithful cartoon, more so than the Batman anime influence series, which came out.
Which one?
It ran for 5 seasons. It finished in 2008.
Oh, The Batman.
The
yeah.
Batman, it was called. Jeff Matsuda, who's done a lot of comic work, yeah. He did the art designs.
That's one where there was like a Marilyn Manson version of the Riddler.
Yes,
that's
and
the
Joker
one.
Was like in a straitjacket, barefoot, yeah, like running crazy, around like an acrobat.
Did he have dreads? I think he had like green dreads.
Did he? Possibly?
Or he had like crazy wild
hair. He had
hair.
Crazy wild green hair.
Yeah.
So that was a good series, but it was a bit too, they reimagined the characters a bit too wildly. Batman the Brave and the Bold is awesome because if you're new to kind of comics, it kind of explains the characters enough. There was one which I was quite surprised. There was an episode where there's a flashback to Batman's origin.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like having a dream, he's thinking about it, and he leaves the theater with his parents, and him and his parents walk into this dark alley. The camera remains steady, they disappear into the darkness, and then all you hear is two shots, bang bang, and just muzzle flash in the darkness. And they go, Mom, Dad, it's quite spooky. I was quite surprised how spooky that was, just bang bang and muzzle flashes.
And this is Brave and the Bold, not the Batman, right?
No, this is Batman the Brave and the Bold.
Okay, right.
Thank
sorry.
You.
Yeah.
So Bruce Wayne doesn't really appear in it until kind of season 2.
Yeah, I noticed they just go straight into
Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
Robin does appear, but he's kind of left. So at this point in the cartoon, Batman's been around for a couple of years. So yeah, they've done 2 seasons. Apparently, it just announced the Comic-Con this year, in July. That'll end after season 3, and then there'll be a focus on a more of a darker Batman.
I think it's a great idea in terms of introducing the audience to the wider world of the other DC characters.
Yeah.
Because that's always been DC's problem, is they're big sellers of, you know, Batman, Superman, and people know who Wonder Woman is, but they don't care.
No.
and there's all this whole world of other characters who most, say, children, for example, they're trying to indoctrinate with knowledge of all these characters. Yeah. They're doing a good job.
Educate.
Yeah, it's not in a skeezy way. It's a quality show on its own. But I think on that purpose, the chances of them making an Aquaman movie, are improved.
Yeah.
When these kids grow up to an age where they're like, oh, I remember that guy who was on the platelet.
And the creators have said that they want to focus more on the B list and C list characters.
Yeah.
Like your Aquaman's, unfortunately, and your Blue Beetles, your Plastic Man's.
Polka Dot.
The Green Lantern Corps shows up. The whole Corps shows up in one episode, following Despero, who's a purple guy with a few eyes and fins on his head or whatever. So it's good. I really enjoy it. And I thought, it doesn't make fun of the characters, but weird things happen in comics, and this kind of acknowledges that. So
yeah, it's definitely 60s.
If you're a fanboy and you want your kids to get into comics as much as you do, this is definitely a kid-friendly but also adult-friendly show you can watch together.
Yeah, good adventure show.
I also watched Lethal Weapon.
Which one?
The first one.
Yeah.
Just on a whim.
Yeah.
And I forgot talking about Out There. I forgot how Out There it was. You kind of had these fond memories of films from the 80s. But
I love the soundtrack, the Eric Clapton on guitar and Michael Kamen the saxophone all the way through.
And I remember watching it as a kid because my parents would watch it. But, I mean, it opens with, like, you know, a topless woman diving into a car from a penthouse. So it's not one for kids.
Does it switch between different stunt women? Like, is it one of those things? Like,
you can't really tell.
Remember in Blade Runner where he shoots the girl and she starts running through the panes of glass? And
they fixed that.
Did they?
In the new edition, which came out last year, it's like a 5-disc.
So they reshot those.
They reshot with the same actress, and yeah, because yeah, and they did all stuff.
Well, at least
face.
A better wig.
They got Harrison Ford's son in, and filmed him from the mouth down, and did some other bits. And it's like the definitive edition of Blade.
Yeah, I heard of that, but I never watched it.
Yeah, if you can find it, watch it. So Lethal Weapon. It's written by Shane Black. He wrote all four Lethal Weapon films, which I love. And Shane Black also wrote and directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Oh, great movie, yeah.
Which could be a Batman-Iron Man team-up because it stars Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, right, Val Kilmer.
Robert Downey Jr., Val Kilmer in that film. And he's also attached to a Doc Savage film, a pop character back from the day.
Doc Savage.
Man in Bronze appears on the pop covers of the 50s with his shirt ripped off. And DC are doing a new series on him now. He's like a pulp hero. Man in Bronze, Doc Savage, not ringing any bells. Wow, okay. Classic pop character.
I'm sorry.
There was a film, actually. Arnold Schwarzenegger was attached to a film for years, but there was a film in the 70s.
Okay.
He's like the pinnacle of human perfection. He's a muscly guy, quite smart, has sidekicks. Anyway, so that's what I have been reading/watching.
Oh, yeah.
As for you, young man.
I read it's the first volume of a series called 13.
Yep.
You might have seen it on the shelves with XIII if you can't read Roman numerals, by Vance and Van Ham, which I think they're, I don't know where exactly from Europe they are, but I picked this up on a whim.
I think it is a French or Belgian comic.
French-Belgian, yeah. There's been a video game based on it, which some of you might have seen.
Yeah, I played on the original Xbox. It's an awesome game.
Yeah. It's got the comic's a bit like Modesty Blaze. It's it's not told in three-panel format, but it's this kind of, he wakes up on a beach, you know, and he's lost his memory from a bullet wound to the head.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's raised back to healthiness, and then he's trying to find out who he is. Does that sound familiar at all?
Yeah, you could say
It's a complete rip-off of
Isn't
Robert
Ludlum. He's meant to kill the president or something like
That's
that?
That's what happens in this, yeah. Okay. He's told that he sees his picture eventually of him sort of assassinating the president or trying to. But I'm sure there'll be a vast conspiracy behind it or something.
Has he got a tattoo of 13 on his arm?
He does.
Something?
It's on his neck or something, so the doctor sees it, and then, yeah. I'd say it's almost like, not word for word, but gosh, it's similar to Ludlum's Bourne identity. The book, maybe more so. It's all right. I mean, if you dig these kind of action spy things, I think it would appeal to you. It's made sometime in the early 80s, but it's so familiar now after seeing the Bourne movies, and it outright rips off the plots.
So it's made by Cine Books, a dollar of English translation of European
That's
stuff.
Correct,
talking about Val Kilmer again, there was a, I think it was a direct-to-video film maybe 2-3 years ago. Stephen Dorff was in it as well.
Wow.
I think he played the 13 character. So they've made quite a few of these books, haven't they?
I was looking through the back, and there's at least...
Must be a dozen or so.
Yeah, more than a dozen, eh? Oh, there's at least 18 different. But they're kind of, let's say, 70-page, does that look right?
Yeah.
40-page, 70-page.
So if you like a Secret Agent James Bondy kind of stuff?
Yeah, not my bag, maybe.
No?
Yeah. Do you want to read it?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, see, that was my reaction.
Good art, though. Quite fine. And
quite fine art,
quite almost American, quite styled art. Almost John Byrne kind of like.
I think it's pretty strong in there's this couple of long shots. Like, there's a lot of close-up, you know, movie stuff. But then there's these interesting frames where the camera pulls right back.
Yep.
And then it's kind of almost like a theatre.
Okay, yes.
And I think those panels work the best because he renders the environments like... he puts a lot of effort into them, and you lose it a bit with all the wild Modesty Blaze close-ups, you know?
Yep.
But, otherwise, interesting. Maybe check that out.
I also discovered, this isn't really what we've been reading, but talk about films from the 80s, Ghostbusters, they're now releasing Stay Puffed Marshmallows. If you go on thinkgeek.com, nice. See, I kind of thought that was an actual brand.
No.
But Marshmallow Man. But
he was based vaguely on the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's this... character, mascot.
Yeah, who's wears like a little chef hat. You poke him in the tummy and he goes, woo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, yes, Mr. Burns thought Homer Simpson was him once.
That's it.
He was hallucinating on an oily rag or something.
Yeah.
So you can actually go on thinkgeek.com and you can order boxes of Stay Puffed branded marshmallows, officially licensed by Ghostbuster. And each marshmallow...
Does it have a face?
No, they're just normal marshmallows. Oh, okay. Well, he is on the box. But each marshmallow contains 100 milligrams of caffeine.
Wow.
So Yeah.
And if you're wondering what Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is, just stop listening. If you've not seen Ghostbusters, I don't want your business.
Take it elsewhere.
Take yourself elsewhere.
You can't come in here with those shoes.
Remove yourself from the internet and go rent the Ghostbusters, you fool.
Yes.
You foolish fool.
And Ghostbusters 2, which has a He-Man reference.
Yeah, Ghostbusters 2 is an essential viewing, maybe.
No.
But if you like the first one, I mean, a lot of people really diss on the Ghostbusters 2 movie, but I kind of think it's the same thing.
I haven't heard much from the Ghostbusters 3.
Yeah.
Because that was, Bill Murray was holding it up, but then the video game with all the original cast was quite a success. He said, I want to be in on this.
Pretty great game, actually.
Yeah.
But it's, no, like, Bill Murray's, like, his standards are too high. He's busy making Garfield movies, I believe. I won't touch it unless if the script is just right.
Yeah. He hasn't made much since. Like, after Lost in Translation, I thought he was kind of going into indie world.
He did, like, a couple of...
He was in that Broken Zombieland. Flowers.
Was he in Zombieland?
Yeah.
He had a cameo...
You haven't seen that?
No.
Oh, you got
he had a cameo in the Get Smart movie. Like, really? So who is he to say, I'm not starting in your Ghostbusters 3, I'm a thespian?
Yes.
Like, come on. Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd have been, like, working on the script. And it's funny because they keep putting out conflicting things. So they say, no, everyone's on board and it's happening. And Bill Murray's like, I've not heard a single thing about this film. So who knows whether he's just being Bill Murray and being dry and kind of like... No, it's not happening. No.
Yeah.
And then next week, Ghostbusters 3. It was meant to be Ghostbusters in Hell, but I don't think that'll happen.
That's right, yes.
That seems wrong to me.
Well, it was going to be like, I think Manhattan was, or Hell was going to invade Manhattan.
Okay. Well, that sounds like Ghostbusters, all of them.
Yeah, that's true.
But, see, I always imagined it'd be cool if, like, just to, because they're all quite old, aged now.
Yep.
These guys strike me as the sort who'd start a franchise to make money off it.
There was talk of that, like, they'd have sidekicks.
Yeah.
Like, Ben Stiller was going to be in it at one point, and I think Jack Black or whatever.
Like I imagine they'll pick, like, you remember Tropic Thunder? Remember the young guy in that? I can't remember his name.
Not Jack Black.
No, the youngest guy. He's kind of nerdy looking.
Oh, okay, yes.
Him, I'm willing to put money on that he'll be in this, because he's been in a few Harold Ramis projects and stuff.
Okay.
Yep. And I think Harold Ramis has a kid, doesn't he?
He does.
Yeah.
He also directed Juno, didn't he?
Juno's by a woman, isn't it? Oh, no, she wrote the script. You might be right.
Diablo Cody wrote the script.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ivan Reitman? Oh, no, I'm thinking of Reitman, not Ramis.
Yeah, you're thinking of the director of... Yes. Yeah.
Oh. Getting my Ramises and my Reitmans mixed up.
Oh, I'm all confused. That's enough about Ghostbusters.
That's very
painful. Should we talk about Father's Day?
Let's go into our theme of the week.
Our special theme this week is Father's Day.
Yes.
Specifically, dads in comics.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about a range of how dads are depicted in comics. Good, bad, absent, surrogate dads. We'll be talking about a bit of everything, a blend of indie stuff, superheroes. And my oh my, there are a lot of dads.
There seems to be something in the water at the moment, fathers in regards to comics. I mentioned Doc Savage before. Mm. DC have got the rights to Doc Savage, the Spirit... Mm-hmm. Like those older kind of pop characters, and they've created a series called First Wave. They're halfway through, it's 6 issues now, and they're kind of focused. Batman's in it with his guns because it's set in the 40s.
See, I think that's because they're realizing, you know, the main audience behind comics is at that fatherhood age. And they were...
Possibly.
And when they saw how people reacted to retconning Spider-Man into, like, a young guy again...
Yeah.
They probably realised, hey, our audience is this age. Let's have everyone have kids. It's more relatable.
Well, the focus of this First Wave series was the Doc Savage's dad. I think Clark Savage is his name. Or Clark Savage Sr.
Is it French? Is it like Colbert Savage?
Died, and then they're like, did he really die? And that kind of stuff. So there's father issues. Jonathan Hickman writer, he's dealing with his series S.H.I.E.L.D.
And I love John Hickman.
Fantastic Four.
Mm.
He's talking about Nathaniel Richards, which we'll talk about later.
Mm.
There's quite a lot of... and Hulk at the moment.
Yeah.
It's last issue.
Well, let's get into topics then, shall we? Or
please do. Cats in the cradle and the
spoon. Yeah, the spoon, yes. Absent dads. Physically and emotionally absent. I mean, we can all relate to that feeling of feeling left alone.
But can you be emotionally present yet physically absent? I suppose you could Skype your son.
An example of that might be Kal-El, Superman's dad.
Well, he's
so,
dead.
Well, what's his name, though?
Jor-El.
Jor-El. Sorry, Kal-El's Superman.
It is.
I should have known that. Nicolas Cage.
That's why I'm here.
Yeah,
I've got your back.
Yeah. Well, I'd say he sees him, you know, holograms, so he's emotionally absent, present for him, but physically absent.
In the films, yes. So he doesn't exist in the...
Yeah, I find that interesting. Marlon Brando in the film, yeah.
And in the comics, his Jonathan Kent just died. Well, not just, probably last year he died.
Oh.
Saving his mum, saving Superman's mother, Martha, yeah. His wife, from a brainiac attack.
So oh, he's a good dad, isn't he?
He is. He sacrificed his
good
life.
Good surrogate dad. But absent dads, I guess... physically absent dads. I mean, we talked about the Phantom last week, but there's a whole lineage of dads who just run around traveling, adventuring, and giving birth to children, and then relying on the Bengali tribesmen to raise them into proper human beings.
So father and son Phantom don't team up? Or?
Very rarely. Usually the son might have some sort of someone trying to screw him over, or he might be in danger, and the dad might save him, even when... And the kids always go off to college and all that. But it's this whole, like, you got to continue the family business, son.
Yeah.
And very rarely do you see them clash. The son might not be interested in carrying on the name. But then, obviously, the son will see the good work his dad does and come around and basically have the same personality as his dad.
Yeah.
They always end up kind of well-adjusted, or as well-adjusted as you can be in a purple suit and you live in the jungle.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, it's kind of shocking that all of their kids are white. Considering they're raised among these Bengali tribesmen.
Yeah, that's true.
He always finds a clean white woman for my son. You know?
Yeah. Well, he travels a lot, doesn't he?
He travels a lot, but I would have thought there'd be at least some mixed race Phantoms.
Yeah, that's true. There.
I'm kind of offended. But yeah, Phantom, an absent dad. You could say he's a good dad, but he would be if he was there more.
One series which I am vaguely familiar with is Invincible by Robert Kirkman, who also writes The Walking Dead, comes out from Image. I think it's around issue 80-something mark at the moment. Omni-Man is like this big Freddie Mercury kind of moustachioid character. And he raises a...
Moustachioid.
that's a word.
Moustachioed.
Moustachioed. Isn't that a coffee? Extra moustachio to go, thanks.
Yeah, that's correct.
Two shots of
espresso. You go to a coffee shop and ask for a moustachio and see what they give you.
Well, it could be a nut.
I'll go with you. I want to see what they do.
Mark Grayson is the son of Omni-Man. He's known as Invincible as he's a kid. So Omni-Man is a superpowered alien from a race called the Vitrolmites. So Omni-Man, they actually fight, and like early in the series, like the first six issues or something, they're kind of father and son superheroes, and then Omni-Man beats him up and then leaves and says, "I'm coming back to invade Earth." That's about as familiar as I am with the series. But apparently Omni-Man's back now, so there's a lot of father-son in that. So he's an absent dad because he doesn't even live on the same planet. And then he was kidnapped by his own people, and I think he's rebelled against the invading Earth.
Cool.
So he might turn good after all.
A physically absent dad would be Thomas Wayne to Batman's Bruce Wayne.
That was because he's dead.
It's because he's dead, so it's not his fault. And when he was there, he was a caring, loving dad, great public figure in terms of helping people out, society, all this.
Doctor.
And I think Bruce's daddy issues have extended to, I need to live up to that. But he does it by punching instead of helping the poor.
He does help the poor as well, as Bruce Wayne. He gives a lot to charity.
I've always argued, like, how much more could he help the poor if, like in Ex Machina, he ran for mayor?
Yeah.
Or if instead of spending money on sonar bat goggles, he gave it to, like, a public works project. He does, but, you know, think about how much would a bat plane cost. Because that's a one-off production item, and you'd have to either get some aeronautical engineers to do it and pay them all off to not tell anyone that you've worked on a bat plane. I don't know. I think Thomas Wayne would be a bit worried about his son, like his heart's in the right place, but maybe you should be worrying about the Wayne Foundation.
Well, so. You know, one hand writes checks, one hand strangles henchmen. It's the two-pronged approach to social change.
If you put the check on the back of a henchman you've knocked out, I suppose you could.
It reminds me of that in The Running Man, the Arnold Schwarzenegger film. There's a bit where he has to sign like a waiver on the back of guy's some greasy studio pants back, and then he stabs the pen in his back. And he can't get the pen out.
That's cruel.
Yeah.
He'd be a wonderful father. That's and he was in that film when he was getting his son that Turbo Man doll.
The Christmas film.
Yeah, the Christmas. Jingle All the Way. Yes, another great dad. A bit psychotic, but put that cookie down!
Another absent father would be Bruce Banner. Hulk has a son, Hulk Jr. No, he's actually called...
Hulkston.
Hulk. Hulk, he's actually called Scar. That's S-K-A-A-R. He's the son of Hulky.
Named after the Lion King character?
No. The planet he was born on is called Sakaar, which confuses things. But anyway, so he first appeared in Marvel Comics in 2008 during the World War Hulk series when Iron Man, Reed Richards from Fantastic Four, all these characters had enough of Hulk. So you're destroying the place every time we get angry, so we're going to send you off planet. So they shot him off, and he was just meant to land on an uninhabited planet, so he could live off his days and not destroy any buildings. But then, you know, as these things happen, his ship went off course, landed on another planet, became a slave and then a gladiator, and then he rose up. He fell in love with Queen Kyera, the old strong.
And do they have the kid?
They have the kid.
Mm.
She died. Hulk returned to Earth angry, blaming all the superheroes.
Does he know he has a kid?
He does now. And then eventually, so this Scar kid, he was kind of born in lava and he kind of grew up by monsters, kind of raised him. He wants revenge against Bruce Banner, against his dad. So he lands on Earth. He hates, they have a fight, blah, blah, blah.
Do they reconcile?
Eventually.
Ah.
I'm getting to that.
I'm sorry.
And then Bruce Banner can't turn into the Hulk for some reason. I don't know why. So then he...
Plot convenience, I imagine.
He then teaches Scar how to be a noble warrior rather than a warmonger type person. And in, if you read Incredible Hulk 611, which I'm just reading now...
I'm flicking through it.
Which is just came out last week, actually. Looks like an image. They have a fight. So Bruce Banner and the Hulk, it kind of... Well, he turns into the Hulk again after not being the Hulk for many, many issues. They have a fight, and then they, again, for some reason, they both turn into... Spoiler alert! They both turn into their human forms at the end. So... Hulk is Bruce Banner again, and Scar becomes the little boy.
So is Scar the grey dude?
And no, that's the woman. Oh, yes, sorry, Scar, yes.
See, who's Red Hulk?
Red Hulk has just been unveiled as General Thunder, Thunderbolt.
Okay, I'm sorry.
What's his name? Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross.
Are they getting along now, him and his son?
Yes, they are. If you look on the last page, I'm just turning my lad into it right now. Look
Please
at that.
Do. Oh, they're hugging.
They're hugging and everything.
He's a tiny little grey boy.
Yeah. So so that's been quite an interesting... So most of this has been done by the work of writer Greg Pak. And there's a lot of Hulks now. There's like World War Hulks. Mm. The series are just finished. Scar is getting his... I think he's getting his own series, perhaps.
And this is the most recent
most recent one.
So we'll see how their father-son relationship develops as time goes on.
And there's also... And also the son... the daughter of Red Hulk, who's... Greg, who played him...
Oh, Red Hulk's a dad too?
Yeah. Or Betty Ross, who married Bruce Banner.
Betty Ross.
And she is now a Red Hulk. She's getting her own series.
Everyone's
as well.
Getting Hulkified.
So, She-Hulks.
Hulk
at school. So there's a whole bunch of Hulks running around in all different colours at the moment. It's very hard to keep track of. So Bruce Banner, absent father.
Lovely. Straying away from the superheroes for a while, Jimmy Corrigan, the smartest kid on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Ware's, I think it's his masterpiece, basically.
Yep.
Originally serialised in his Acme novelty series. It's got bits of autobiography in it because Chris Ware, his own relationship with his father is they only met once in his adult life, and that was during the period that he was working on the book. But the central theme of the story is Jimmy Corrigan. He was abandoned them when he was just a small boy. And the central event in the novel is Jimmy's first ever trip to visit his now aging father, who has contacted him after years of silence, and then realizing that his dad isn't maybe what he expected. As a child, his mum had this one night stand, just after the dad left, with a guy dressed up as a superhero.
Ah.
He was selling cars. Like, he was like a mascot, basically.
Okay.
And so he has this image in his mind of fatherhood as these superhero types, you know?
Okay.
And dad is basically just like him. They're all these kind of emotionally abusive, manipulative losers, basically. And that trait gets passed down. And through the novel, there's a subplot of Jimmy's great-grandfather and his son. And that's actually an abusive relationship. The dad treats him awfully.
Yeah.
You get this feeling like... What's a more cynical take on father's son?
Well, there is hints of that in the Hulk as well.
For sure.
Especially in that last issue that I just mentioned, there's like flashbacks to Bruce Banner's father and he's beating up his wife and Bruce.
Mm.
So there's kind of father-son issues running throughout the last few issues of the Hulk series.
Yeah. Jimmy Corrigan, they're all unsympathetic losers and they're poisoned by their fear, anger and parental betrayal. And fatherhood is this... it doesn't live up to your imagination of what a father should be, and he's disappointed how much his dad is just like him and there's no hope for him. I think he thought if he met this Superman, he might be more like him, you know? And that's a more disappointed feeling of dad's. there's this daydream he has. He has these horrible, spiteful daydreams where he sort of basically takes violent revenge on people, and he has this daydream with his dad's talking to him, and he breaks a bottle in his dad's face.
Wow.
And then guts him and kills him with the bottle.
Yeah.
And there's a lovely sequence later on in person where the dad tries to put his arm around his son. They're trying to bond, but it's the most awkward, unloving thing you've ever seen. Like, and they just both do not know how to be with people. So Jimmy Corrigan, dad's, check that one out.
Cool.
Stitches, another indie comic, which we talked about last week.
Yep.
In that
the
one.
Week before.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Episode 3.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, these things all blur into one another. But that one's by David Small, autobiographical piece. His dad's a Detroit physician who vents his anger by hitting a punching bag, and that's a sound that he remembers from his childhood, that rhythmic bang, bang, bang. And his dad was convinced he could cure his son's respiratory problems by shooting him up with heavy doses of radiation.
Yes.
So, like the Hulk again. No, this really happened. Yeah. And he literally poisoned his relationship with his son by giving him cancer.
Wow.
Another emotionally absent dad. Yes. Not willingly abusive. Do you have any more?
No.
I do.
Okay, please go on.
Sandman, Neil Gaiman's.
Okay, I'm not that familiar with that, but yes.
Yeah. Sandman's son is Orpheus of the Greek mythology. That's how Neil Gaiman writes it.
Okay.
And if you're familiar with Orpheus, basically his new bride dies on their wedding night. He goes to the underworld to try and retrieve her. He in this version, he asks his dad, Dream, for help. Yep. And when he goes, no, you shouldn't do this, you should let her go, he basically says, you're not my father. And he goes down. If you're familiar with the theme, the girl is, he turns back when he's not meant to, and the girl dies, and he's ripped apart by the savage. They're not harpies, they're something like that.
Okay.
Dream finds him his severed head on the beach. The head's still alive, and he's been ripped into pieces, and the son's like begging him to kill him, because they're kind of semi-gods, you know, still alive. And Dream doesn't give him the... Dream is Sandman, by the way, if you wasn't sure. He doesn't fulfill his wish. He tells him, you said you're no longer my son. Dream is kind of a bit petulant in that way. He never really fulfills his obligations to people, and he always obeys the rules that he himself could cheat any time, you know, because he's basically above gods, you know. So with only the head remaining, he establishes a priesthood to take care of his son, and he never visits him for centuries.
Wow.
And then right at the end... Right at the end, through a series of plot events, he finally talks to his son because he needs to, and he grants the son his final wish to let him die, to kill him. It's kind of, and that knowing that it'll lead to events that'll cause him to die, so he takes this sacrifice on. It's just, he's kind of like the Robert Smith of comic book characters, Dream is.
Robert Smith?
Yeah, from The Cure.
Oh, okay.
He looks just like him. Yeah. But he's this petty, not Robert Smith, Dream's this petty, authoritative, emotionally distant dad. Not the kind of dad you want, even though he's the god, lord of all dreams.
Yes.
Shall we move on to a different set of dads?
What's our next category?
I think we should talk about... awful dads.
Bad dads.
Bad dads. Bad
dads. Bad dads. Bad dads. What you gonna do when they come for you?
Very nice. What do you got?
Well, I guess I could talk about Lex Luthor. He hasn't... In the 90s, he had a daughter.
Yes.
A daughter called Lena.
Lena Luthor.
Lex Luthor was married briefly to a Contessa, which I think he eventually killed her, and he set a jet on fire.
That's unlike Lex.
So it's a bit confusing, but what happens is there's a good, and we know the green-skinned alien Brainiac, but there's a good version of the future called Brainiac 13, who's one of the members of the Legion of Superheroes. He arrives from the 64th century, and he... and then basically him and Lex kind of meet up and whatever, and then the evil Brainiac hides in the baby version of Lena. And then she gets aged, and then she's like a bald teen with light green skin, and she's now I don't know, and then I think Lex sacrifices her to save the... I don't know. Anyway, but what happens is she's now retconned, so she's now Lex's younger sister, because the name Lena Luthor has been used in a few different characters. So in the 90s, she was his daughter, but in the 50s and 60s, she was
his sister. Is it Luthor or Luthor? Sister. Sorry.
Luthor.
Luthor, sorry.
No, it's Luthor. So now she's his sister, like she was in the Silver Age. But so yeah, Lex Luthor, he was not only an absent dad, but also a bad dad.
I can imagine, yeah.
David Kane, who was...
Yes.
He framed Bruce Wayne in the Bruce Wayne murderer
not story a nice guy.
In the 90s. He's like this awesome... Grey hair.
Is he like a martial arts assassin?
Yeah,
he's like
a mercenary and stuff. Yeah. He appeared a lot in the comics of in DC Batman titles in the late 90s. He hasn't been seen much of since. I'm sure he's dead anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He raised his daughter, Cassandra Cain, who's like a young Asian girl, to be an expert assassin like him.
Basically, he never spoke around her. He didn't teach her how to speak. Instead, he taught her to express... what she would normally talk as through physical violence.
Yes.
So I think the first time he uses her, she's 6 years old, and he gets her to murder a bunch of guys as part of an assassination job. A good dad, you might say.
Kind of like Big Daddy and Kick-Ass.
Similar to Big Daddy and Kick-Ass.
But a bit nicer.
Yeah. Big Daddy and Kick-Ass at least has a bit of rapport with his daughter.
Yeah.
He doesn't just he does raise her to be a killing machine.
But he doesn't just use her to meet his own ends.
Yeah, his quest is more of a revenge thing. He's a bit blinded by his revenge, I would say.
So Cassandra Cain, who's the young daughter of David Kane, grows up to become Batgirl.
Yes.
And she doesn't speak. She had her own series for a while. She doesn't speak for a while.
With covers by James Jean, which are really nice covers.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. She was a really good character. She was like,
she was really interesting.
Batgirl.
She had the mask covering her face, so she was completely black, which was interesting.
And as you said, her ability was that she was able to read because she couldn't speak. So her ability was that she could read her opponent's next move.
Yeah,
so she always won fights. And that was an awesome one where she was fighting the Joker.
Mm.
And the Joker was just whipping her, just beating her up completely.
Because he's random.
Yeah. And because she couldn't read his thoughts, read his next moves, because even the Joker didn't know. And Joker's beating her up, and he's going, "Where did you get your bat suit? From the box of a cereal box?" And he's just beating her up, and she had no chance against
him. Trash talking.
So that was
Has the Joker ever had a kid? He'd be a great dad.
I think in Kingdom Come, there was a character called Joker's daughter.
Oh, yeah.
It was like kind of Harlequin... Joker.
Yeah, they didn't really explain her. She was just there.
I think she appeared in other alternate universe stories.
I know Harley Quinn's always wanting a baby with Joker. And when that happens, my God. Oh, wait, no, Anarchy.
What?
Anarchy.
The Batman with the gold face and the red hood and
He's
all that?
Joker's kid, isn't he?
No, I don't think so.
I swear he is. I don't know much about him, but yeah, that's a distant far somewhere. No, I'm sure of it. Alan Moore made the character, didn't he?
I remember Norm Brayfogle drawing the character. He had a miniseries, and he was, again, a character Anakin. In the 90s in the Batman series.
I'm sure Anakin insisted that the Joker was his dad. I don't remember if maybe they revealed later he wasn't, but I'll have to check this one later.
Interesting.
Somebody email us and let us know if we're completely wrong.
Please do.
We did mention Kick-Ass briefly.
Yes.
Big Daddy, gosh.
Played by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, yeah, I thought excellently.
I've just been watching the DVD, actually, all the extras. There's like 3 hours of extras. And yeah, it's pretty cool. He talks in the Adam West voice.
All the time?
When he puts in the... Well, you've seen the film.
I have, yeah.
Only when he puts on the Big Daddy costume and he puts on the little handlebar moustache as well.
He glues it on. Pretty cool. He's like this great... And there's this great scene where he's putting on the eye makeup, which...
Oh, yes. Just also, paint.
Because in the films, you always see they do have the eye makeup on to make the mask complete.
That's why
complete.
Batman should have the white pupils like he does in the comics, just to protect his eyes.
Oh, like white, there's like glass.
Yeah, it's glass, and he can press a button and it goes infrared vision and all that kind of stuff.
They had that in Batman Forever, and look how that turned out.
And The Dark Knight, briefly, when he had the sonar vision.
That's my least favourite element of The Dark Knight. I think most people could agree with that.
Yes.
Moving away from superheroes.
Well, do we have to?
Oh, no, you've got
Norman Osborn.
Oh, of course.
He would be a bad dad. Norman Osborn, also known as the Green Goblin, played by Willem Dafoe in the Spider-Man films.
Willem Dafoe's great.
Even when he died, he appeared in
the last flashback,
two.
Yeah.
So he kind of ejected this staff and became the Green Goblin. He was the Bane. So he was, when it first started, he was interesting because his son was Peter Parker's best friend.
Yeah.
So Norman Osborn died, and then obviously... Harry Osborn, as his son, grew up, and he became the Green Goblin, and then the New Goblin,
carrying on the family line, like evil phantoms.
Yes, I think Harry, I don't know what's happened. I don't really read the Spider-Man titles. But anyway, that's a kind of father-son evil combination.
In the films, they wrapped that up nicely, I thought. You know, with him becoming...
They did. They did become friends in the comics for a while. And I think Harry Osborn died when he saved someone from a burning building. Whether he's back or not now.
Does he blame Spider-Man somehow?
I don't know.
Everyone blames Spider-Man.
I think they did reconcile at the end there.
Mm.
So that's another version of a bad dad.
Yep. Got any more superheroes there?
Not really.
Oh, okay. We can talk about Star Wars there.
Well,
father-son style, but particularly in the comics.
Jango Fett's not really a superhero, but Star Wars Blood Ties has just come out last week. It's a new series from Dark Horse, who have the Star Wars license, basically focused on, well, here it says, the Blood Ties series will explore the familial links between some of Star Wars' most famous and infamous characters. So this one, which is written by a Melbourneian Aussie, Tom Taylor, and it's got art by Chris Scouff, which is quite painterly. So this is a new four-issue miniseries just been released called Blood Ties, and it's focused on Jango and Boba Fett, who teamed up in episode 2.
Little Bobby Fett.
Attack of the Clones. Get him, Dad!
Like when he picks up the helmet with the head still in it. That's great.
It's actually a pretty good comic. So Jango Fett is teaching his son how to be a mercenary and that kind of stuff.
Better than the film, would you say?
Jango Fett's more bad in the comic.
Is he?
He's more of a tough guy in the comic. He wasn't really that tough, I felt.
He didn't have any personality in the film.
No.
Yeah.
So here it's pretty... Tom Taylor's a good writer. He's done a lot of bunch of stuff. He's writing The Authority at the moment for DC.
He's a bad daddy.
So he basically teaches kids. So the first few pages he sends his son into this huge creature and just, you know, I'm spraying you with their scent and this creature will hate you. Now,
this is your test.
Get me a tooth of this creature and it comes back with a tooth. And he's going, why did you do that? And he goes, so now you won't fear anything else from then on. So that's pretty cool. So, yeah, Star Wars Blood Ties. So Jango Fett, it would be another bad dad. I guess he spends time with his son, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
But he spends time teaching me how to kill people.
Another dad who does exactly the same thing from a manga, of course, Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yes.
The epic manga by...
Frank Miller loves that.
Everyone loves... Have you ever read it?
I've seen a couple of films, I think, but no, I haven't read much of
it. I'll have to lend you some. It's pretty cool. By writer Kazuo Koike and artist Goseki Kojima. It's basically the lone wolf of the story. Ogami Ito is the shogun's executioner, and there's a struggle for power involved, and his family's killed except for his baby son. And he's forced to resign from his job. He's basically framed for something, for being a traitor when he's not. And... he gives his son a choice. His son's like 1 year old, baby, basically. He gives his son a choice between a toy ball or a sword. And if he picks the ball, he'll kill him so he'll be off with his mother because he knows he's going to walk down this path to seek revenge, the assassin's Ronin's path. You know? And Daigoro, which is the son, baby kid, he chooses the sword. He just sort of crawls up to it, so it's not much of a choice. Yeah. You know? And he then basically ropes his baby son into helping him kill people.
Yeah.
And you've probably seen the samurai with the baby cart.
Yes.
Yes. And the baby cart's equipped with weapons, and he always uses the baby kid as a distraction to help him.
I remember seeing one of the films he puts the baby in like a little pond, and he pretends to drown, so it's kind of splashing around, but he's actually just standing on like a bank or something.
That's right, yeah.
Sand, and then the bad guys... trying to sell, and then the father comes out and kills the bad guys.
Yeah, and it's like they're bad guys, but they're running in to save a child, so they can't be that bad. Like, he murders good and bad because he's hired to do it, you know. And he's after this quest for revenge, you know, to avenge his killed family and his own honor. It's pretty insane that you would rope a small baby into it, but he always endangers him. And in a sense, he's like a father with no options and no friends in this very cold and class-bound society. So you could say what he's doing is... he does no choice, and he's a good dad because he's helping raise his son, but you could say he's also a complete maniac. And he's instead of fleeing or helping his son raise, you could have given him to someone else to raise, but because they're so class-bound, he has to stay in the same class as him, and he pursues honor through murder and violence instead of his son's safety. And, you could see a lot of other relationships taking on from comics. I mean, Big Daddy and Hit Girl are basically the same thing.
That's true.
Yeah. But we've talked enough about awful dads, I think.
Surrogate, not the Surrogates movie.
Yes, let's not talk about Surrogates.
You mentioned Alfred.
So, yeah, Surrogate Fathers, Alfred and Batman. Oh, Bruce Wayne, I should say. Yeah.
And I suppose Bruce has been a surrogate father to the various Robins and Batgirls he's had over the years.
I'd say that theme pops up a lot in Batman comics.
Yeah, I was just thinking because Grant Morrison and Andy Kubert introduced Damian Wayne in their Batman and Son 2006 miniseries.
Cyclical, baby, cyclical.
So I guess, well, I mean, this will probably be in all of the above categories.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Damian Wayne is the son of Bruce Wayne and Talia al Ghul, who's always had a thing for Batman.
Ra's al Ghul's daughter.
Ra's al Ghul's daughter.
Or mispronounced Ra's in the Batman Begins movie.
Gotham is a poison city and deserves to die.
Oh, yeah. Watanabe.
Yeah. So basically, Damian Wayne wants to be Robin, and he's like a real bit of a punk, very proud, and he thinks he could be the best Robin. And
bit of a Jason Todd, it sounds like.
Yeah, and eventually the best Batman ever. He gets trained by the League of Assassins, and now he's currently Robin in the Batman and Robin series, Grant Morrison. After Bruce Wayne died, he's now coming back to life. But after Bruce Wayne died, Dick Grayson, the first Robin, became Batman. So now we have an interesting dynamic between the Batman and...
Why is Tim Drake not Robin?
He's Red Robin. He went off with a new Kingdom Come inspired suit to try and prove that Bruce Wayne still existed.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, Batman has an illegitimate son,
but
they haven't really spent much time together because when Damian Wayne became Robin, Bruce Wayne pretty much died.
Yeah. They show a full range of them because you have these great, like, Alfred and Bruce relationship. You know? Really, it's his surrogate dad and he cares for him and he's helping him with this quest where maybe he should... I thought they did it well in the film because he's very sceptical and not... he's supportive of it, but he kind of wants him to stop it.
What are you talking about?
Film, Dark Knight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Michael Caine as Alfred. I thought you definitely got the father-son thing there. I thought less of a... I don't like it when he's just the butler. I like when he's caring for him and worrying about him and healing his wounds figuratively and literally.
Lucius Fox, I guess, could also have that kind of father figure played by Morgan Freeman. And I think in the comics, Tim Drake has a... romantic relationship with his daughter.
Oh, gosh. I thought you meant Luke. Yeah.
That would be a real soap opera.
Wow.
Wow. Superman. He would be a surrogate. And again, a lot of people don't know this, but he's kind of a surrogate dad to his cousin, Supergirl, also the clone, Superboy.
Gosh.
And Superman has been a dad in quite a few different imaginary stories. There was a book called Son of Superman. A while ago, he had a daughter, I think, with Wonder Woman in Dark Knight Strikes Again, did he not? I think so.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So Chris...
This world is ours.
Chris Kent appeared in 2006 in the Last Son storyline written by Richard Donner, who directed Lethal Weapon that we talked about last week. And Jeff Johns, they worked together in the film industry before Jeff Johns became a comic writer. And it's kind of blatant that because this came out at the same time as Superman Returns, and Superman Returns had... the boy, Superman's kid in there.
Oh, yeah.
The boy, which everybody's, you know, said Superman's not a deadbeat dad who peers through windows. So, anyway, I don't like that film. So they said, hey, that's an awesome idea. So let's get him in the comics as well. So they created this character called Chris Kent. And basically his parents are General Zod and Ursa, who are the bad kryptonite guys.
Yes, I
stuck
recall.
In the Phantom Zone.
Kneel before Zod.
That's the one. In the Phantom Zone, there's like, it's an ethereal, corporeal, is that the right word?
Yeah.
Ghost-like place. There's one place which is like solid, and that's the prison in the Phantom Zone. So that's where they conceived Chris Kent.
Okay.
Chris Kent escaped. He returned, and then he came to Earth. He just landed, and then Superman said, "Who's this?" And he confirmed that he was a Kryptonian. And Superman, well, Clark Kent said, "Me and Lois will raise this kid as our own."
Mm-hmm.
So he started exhibiting powers.
Is he a good dad?
He's for the time they had together. Yes. Chris Kent returned to the Phantom Zone. He met this woman called Tara Ackbar, who became his girlfriend. They took the pair of the old identities of Flamebird and Nightwing, who were these old Kandorian heroes.
So many names you're throwing at me here.
After their new Krypton, which was the bottle city of Kandor, became its own planet orbiting our sun, they returned to Earth. So Chris Kent returned to Earth to uncover some Phantom Zone escapee agents. So he's still around, I think. But the interesting thing about Chris Kent is that whenever comic characters don't know what to do with babies, they instantly age them.
Yeah.
It happened with Bruce Banner's son, and it happened with Chris Kent. He just aged.
Mm.
So we can't do much with a toddler, so let's get him go through some metamorphosis where he becomes a teenager.
Is it actually a magical metamorphosis, or is it just like time has passed?
I think it's something to do with some scientific kind of thing. It's quite a convoluted origin, and it's been through a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I guess because time doesn't really pass in superhero.
In the Phantoms.
Many superheroes, not pass.
No, that's true. Well, I mean, the Robins have grown up, you know, like Dick Grayson is now Nightwing.
But it's kind of like you never see that in-between period. It's kind of like,
that's true.
Now I'm too old to be your sidekick. Yeah. But when did that happen?
the idea of a super baby has come up a few times. That would be an interesting, because obviously Clark and Lois are married, and that's a different dynamic. But if they had a kid, I think that would be interesting. A lot of stories. I mean, a lot of people in the DC universe see Superman as kind of the granddaddy of all superheroes and look up to him and seek advice and counsel from him. So that would be interesting.
Did we mention the Kents?
Did we? Jonathan and Martha Kent.
Yeah,
Jonathan
stand-in. Yeah, great stand-in parents again.
Yes, I would say so.
Yeah. Uncle Ben from Spider-Man.
Yes.
Yeah. With great advice.
I think Peter Parker's original parents died in a car crash or something, and then they were supposed to be in
spies. Were there spiders in the car?
No, they were like spies, and then they came back as robots. And
I don't like that. That didn't happen as far as I'm concerned.
No. but yeah, Uncle Ben and Aunt May.
Yes.
Raised Peter.
What great piece of advice did Uncle Ben give Petey?
Always part your hair on the left.
Yes.
No, that's not right.
That's it. No, that's it.
With great power comes great responsibility. Actually, I think the actual line from Stan Lee, with great power there must also come great responsibility. I think is the actual line, but the films and the posters and all that always.
I'm sure they tweak it in future comics. Yeah. No, that's what I said. You must have remembered it wrong. another great standing dad. This is from a manga series, 20th Century Boys. Uncle Kenji, who's the main protagonist for at least the first bunch of volumes, and then later, and he's raising his sister's baby.
Okay.
Who basically abandoned the family with a very quick word, like, "I have to leave." And
my bus is here.
Basically, like, you could tell there was something going on. It's related to the cult, you find out later.
Okay.
But that's kind of spoilerish, but. Yeah, it's still early on. She just unquestioningly takes on the role as Kana, that's the girl's name, as her protector and surrogate father. He wears this little backpack with her on it.
Okay.
And like she sort of looks up to him. Like, she knows he's her uncle. She doesn't think he's her dad. And when he's eventually accused of being a terrorist after he dies, spoiler, sorry, gosh, she just takes on his gutsy rocker attitude and, like, she sticks to him as a hero and, like, carries on his personality. So as a surrogate dad, you know, he's better than, and her real dad is most likely some evil cult figure, so I'm sure that'll be revealed later on.
Great dads. Well, if you got some more surrogates there,
I got one which is sort of in between, not great. I want to talk about Mouse for a second.
M-A-U-S Art Spiegelman.
Yeah, Art Spiegelman's well, it's his dad's biography, basically, of his dad's experiences. Vladek, that's his dad's name, is Polish Jew and Holocaust survivor. And through the course of the two volumes of the...
Published in 1986 or the late 80s.
Right, I'd say, about then. Part of that new wave of literary graphic novels. Award-winning, I believe.
Yes.
Art struggles with his relationship with his father, and there's the mix of modern-day scenes of them interacting and the scenes of his father's story, and... Vladek's not a perfect dad, you know, he's lived through this horrible stuff, but he himself has this racial prejudice against blacks, despite his own experiences of this random prejudice, and Art, I think, struggles with that through the story, and the dad himself is quite stingy, he makes life really difficult for everyone around him, including his first wife, Anya, who's Art's mother, and who commits suicide. So he's kind of torn about how he feels about his dad, and he also makes life difficult for his second wife, Marla, who are both concentration camp survivors, and I think they may have met in the course of that. But he presents his dad as how he knows him. You know, he contrasts him with the man in the concentration camps, you know, with what he's like now, and he tries to... The books are about his struggles and his difficulties presenting history and his own dad's personal story and coming to terms with who this man is. It's sort of like... how you look at your dad, and knowing that he's not perfect, and you still have to love him, even if he's, and especially considering what the guy's gone through. I thought that was an interesting dad thing.
It's a great book, and it seems quite a thick read, but as you flick through it, it's so engrossing. And even though the artwork's quite simple, you can't help but keep
the artwork's simple in that. But there's a sequence there which he takes from. He used to work on that magazine. I'm sorry, I can't remember what it's called now. Yeah. But Spiegelman does a lot of other styles, and he does this expressionistic kind of woodblock cut piece in the middle, which shows you, he can do heaps of other styles, and he can draw really well. He's picked this much simpler thing for Mouse. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, great dads.
Great dads.
Happy Father's Day, great dads.
Commissioner Gordon, I suppose. Yeah. He raised Barbara Gordon, who would then become Batgirl.
Yes.
And then get shot in the spine by the Joker in the Killing Joke and become Oracle.
And
I think in the Batman Beyond cartoon, she is actually Commissioner.
She is Commissioner Gordon. And I mean, yeah, you can see his influence on her sense of right and wrong and
justice.
Yeah, he's a great dad. Does he have any other kids?
I know in the films he did, but I don't think so. Not in the comics. Mm.
There's a good moment between him and his daughter. I mean, in the cartoon, okay. Batman animated series. I think the episode's written by Paul Dini. The best ones are.
Yep.
And it's one where she's struggling with whether to tell her dad what she is, because I think she gets injured and then she sort of has to explain to him what happened, kind of thing. And then she's struck coping with what she's going to do, how he's going to react, because he knows if she tells him this and then he'll demand to know who Batman is, she's worried that he'll kill Bruce, you know, how could you put my daughter through this? And she's about to tell him and he's like, no, you don't have to tell me. You're my daughter and I love you, and any choice you make is yours and I'll love you and respect you. And it's like, it's a nice father-daughter moment. Yeah.
Wally West, who's the Flash, who replaced Barry Allen as the Flash when he got killed in DC's Crisis on Infinite Earths series.
Mm.
Barry Allen is now back amongst the Land of the Living and starring in The Flash, written by Geoff Johns. But Wally West has a couple of kids, twins actually, Jay, who's 8, and Iris, who's 10. And again, they kind of grew up fast, super accelerated. So, and they've got costumes and their own powers, and they go on adventures with their dads.
Yeah.
But he's a pretty good dad. He always that love grounds the Flash, and whenever they're time traveling and stuff, how they get back is through the love of their wife and kids. So that's
nice.
And throughout the whole Flash series, there's all grandkids and future kids and cousins and uncles and aunts, and they all have powers. It's quite a big Flash family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another great dad, I would say.
Okay. I've got there's a independent book called Three Shadows by Cyril Pedrosa, who's a French artist and former animator for Disney.
Okay.
It basically tells a story. It's like this idyllic farm life. I think it's about the 17th century. Then about there's a dad, Louis, and his son, Joachim. Is that how you pronounce that? Joachim?
Joachim or Phoenix?
And with father, son, and the wife. And these three shadows basically start to haunt the house, and they represent sickness basically. And the father decides to take the son and try and run, even though it seems inevitable that the son will die. That's what everything's leaning to, and they go on this dangerous journey. And in the course of it, he sells his broken, beating heart, you know, in exchange for the strength and power to save his boy.
Wow.
But he's kind of fooled into it, and it's impossible basically. And he grows into this giant black. It's sort of half in his imagination, and he keeps his son hidden in his fist where there's no room to grow, kind of, because he's so desperate for love, and you know, he wants his son to survive that he'll give up his own soul, kind of thing. But it's inevitable when the son does die, and it's a heart-rending loss. And Pedrosa has said, you know, this has been based on watching two very close friends of his lose a son.
Okay.
But it's like the father's instinct is to run and fight, and the mother's is to nurture and accept and try and spend these last moments. And in the end, because he loves his son and wants him to live, he kind of steals those last moments and shortens it. But, you know, yeah, so it's quite sad, you know, time wasted instead of running together with the family. So he's a good dad and his heart's in the right place. And, it's just you have to learn to accept those hard times.
Kind of reminds me of the Owlman series that DC put out years ago, which I don't think has ever been collected. But there was Owlman is a he's a comic character.
Owlman?
Owlman,
okay.
He has an hour of power when he takes the Miracle Opal. But there was a version where the son can spend an hour with his deceased father, and so like he spends a few minutes at a time. Mm. And they kind of meet up in some imaginary afterlife type place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that it?
No, I've got
Great Dads.
No, Road to Perdition.
Okay,
yeah, the Max Allan Collins and Richard Piers Rayner comic. I've only seen the film version.
As have I.
Yeah, so it is based loosely on the story of Lone Wolf and Cub.
Okay,
so like the son witnesses a mob killing. The dad's a mob enforcer. Basically, they go on the run.
Yep.
And the dad's greatest fear is after all this bloody revenge. His main thing isn't revenge, it's trying to run away. You know, that's why he's different to Lone Wolf and Cub, and he's kind of forced to put a stop to it because he knows his son's in danger. And when the dad dies, you know, in his son's arm right at the end, the son realizes, you know, his father's greatest fear was that he'd grow up to be just like him.
Ah.
So, yeah, great dad in a bad place.
Yes.
I do have one more, and it's probably one of my favourites. Have you read Preacher?
I think I've read the first maybe three or four trades.
Yeah.
It's wacky, out there, in your face stuff.
Yeah. Well, the second volume does detail sort of Jesse Custer. He's the titular preacher. Titular.
Yep.
But his dad dies when he's young, and I'll explain what happens, but his dad instills this love of cowboys and teaches him to protect women and be a good guy. And the quote is, you know, because there's way too many of the bad in this world, you know. And he has this happy childhood, you know, traveling, working. But then when Jesse's mum's psychotic family catches up with them and the intent is to bring her home, and they almost murder John, the dad, until they realize that's their kid. And then they bring them back, and then they both try and escape eventually. And John is killed in front of Jesse's eyes, and Jesse vows never to cry again. But it's he is this sort of ideal dad in that, you know, he's loving, accepting, and tries to instill, you know, the whole series has that cowboy thing, you know, you have to be a good guy, you have to respect women, you have to be your own man, fight for yourself, and if you don't stand up and fight, you're nothing, basically. So yeah, teaches his son the right way to be a man.
I suppose a few dads that would be in all of the above categories.
Sure.
I've got two that I can think of, which would be Cyclops and Cable. This is going to get confusing, but Cable is the guy, the X-Men leader, that shoots beams from his eyes. He had a son.
Cable?
He had a son. Yes, I'm getting there.
He shoots beams from his eyes?
No, Cyclops.
You said Cable.
Did I? Oh, sorry. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me, young Lickerton.
Yeah.
Cable is the son of Cyclops and Madeline Pryor. Madeline Pryor is a clone of Jean Grey.
Yep.
Played by the redhead who was in the films.
No relation to Richard Pryor?
No. So Cable is born in the present, but then he's sent to a war-ravaged future. And he's like a grey-haired soldier. He came back to the present and he led X-Force. And then in the future, he goes back again to the future again. He's a bit of a time traveler or Cable. So the son is actually older than the son's older than the father.
Oh, yeah.
So in the future, he raises the last mutant because all the mutants were gone. And then the last mutant is called Hope, a young redhead called Hope. So Cable acts as a surrogate father to Hope.
Yeah.
Trying to keep her alive because she's the future of the human mutant race. Sorry. Right. So, and then basically Cable died recently when he was trying to hold a time portal open so X-Force could return to the present. So Cyclops and Cable are kind of absent, good and bad and surrogate, all of the above. Wolverine has a son called Daken, an illegitimate son with a Japanese lover.
Type of radish in Japan, actually, really? Which is interesting.
Okay. Daken. So he has he had a mohawk at one stage, and then he replaced Wolverine on the Dark Avengers team. He's got his own series out now, will have in a couple of weeks, Daken. There's a lot of bad blood between father and son. And also Wolverine kind of acts, I guess, as a surrogate father to X-23, who I think is a teammate of his starring in the new Uncanny X-Force series. So she's actually a clone called Laura. She's like a teenage girl, and she's got claws and stuff as well from her hands and feet, I think. So that's another one that is in all of the above categories. Yeah. There's so many fathers, and sometimes it gets confusing, especially in superhero comics.
Yeah. I'd say because a lot of superhero, most comics are written by men, unfortunately.
Maybe, yeah, that's true.
You know, until you ask, but yeah, it's kind of a sad fact.
Yeah.
I guess fatherhood tends to be a topic that pops up a lot because a lot of writers are in their 30s or 40s. I find it's fascinating.
And every character needs a father.
Yeah.
And has had one at some stage. Otherwise, they wouldn't exist.
Well, there are a few godlike characters.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know Galactus's dad would be.
Good point.
Galactus Senior.
Galactus, yes.
Well, that's a pretty good rundown.
I think that wraps us up.
There's a whole bunch of other... I know Starman, written by James Robertson, has a whole bunch of father-son stuff in it, but I'm not that familiar. Also, Day Tripper by Gabriel Barr and Fabio Moon from Vertigo. That's got a whole bunch of father-son stuff in it as well.
Yeah, I know Wilson by Daniel Clowes. Basically a dad who, I think, kidnaps his daughter who he realizes he has. I haven't read it, so check that one out. Interesting indie piece.
That's it.
Yeah.
Fathers.
Now onto website of the week.
Yes, coolvibe.com. Basically, they scour the web for best art, comics, sci-fi, fantasy, manga, video games and stuff. They do 3D renders. They do links to the artist's page. Mm-hmm. Then they'll do themes like Star Wars or concept art from Hubble, concept art from Avatar. There's one in the Hubble telescope.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's just coolvibe.com, just how it sounds.
Yeah, sounds good.
So check that out if you want to see different art each day.
I love concept art sites.
It's a pretty good place. There's a lot of variety there, so it's pretty inspirational and all different styles, so you should find something you like awesome. On that site.
Great. That about wraps us up.
That wraps it up.
Yeah.
Our Father's Day special here of Extra Sequential.
Yeah. If you want to check out more of our work.
Comicbookjesus.com is the name of my blog.
And the music you've heard today has been at purgeaudit.com.
And you can email us at chris@comicbookjesus.com if you want any suggestions or questions.
Or let us know who your favourite dads are in comics.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Father Christmas, perhaps. The father of Christmas.
Yes. Thank you for listening, as always.
Yes.
And we don't know what we'll be talking about next week, but
it'll
it will be
a surprise.
It'll be exciting.
It'll be awesome.
Yeah, guaranteed.
Yeah.
All your money back. Thanks for listening, as always.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.